You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Our show tonight is sponsored by Fairway, like no other market. Welcome to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Weitz, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And Why We Cook is brought to you by me live every Tuesday night at 6:30 on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. But you can also listen to us archived and now 24-hour streaming on HeritageRadioNetwork.com, or 24-hour programming, I should say. So it's getting to be pretty close to winter. It's almost that shortest day of the year. And I was up in Connecticut today doing some private teaching, kind of like the Stepford Wives, but nicer, you know, with a little more personality. No, I have actually a lovely group of ladies who I've been teaching up there for a really, really long time. And I was driving home this afternoon, speeding to get home in time to finish writing my show and get out here to Brooklyn. And it was getting dark by about 4 o'clock tonight. And, you know, we're getting close to the end. I know it just feels like the beginning of winter, but by next week, it's all going to start to turn around. Days are going to start to get shorter. I mean, get longer. But it's going to be a long few months before we really start to see any difference, before we get those 6 o'clock sunsets as opposed to those 4:30 sunsets. So, of course, I'm thinking about winter. I'm thinking about cold weather food. If you go to the green markets now, it's all about the roots and the hardiest of the hardy winter greens. Nothing delicate left in the market now. But those are all great vegetables for winter cooking. And, you know, they all like the stew, those vegetables. They all like the stew. They like the roast. And they really like the braise. And they can take it because they're hardy, because they're firm and they're tough. And they can take that long, slow cooking. They don't fall apart. They don't get too soft. They don't dissolve. My friend Claire came over to a dinner party I had the other day, and she brought a really great stewed kale, tomato, and white bean dish, stew. That was great. Perfect winter food. It was delicious. And Sunday here in New York was really cold and wet and dark and dreary, and it was great for that. And, you know, it was a stew, but what I've been thinking about is braising, because in my world, I think the most perfect cold weather cooking method there is braising. And braising it's like culinary alchemy. It's really like, you know, turning coal into gold, kind of thing. It's about finding like the gnarly, gristly, socially rejected piece of outcast meat in the market and taking a chance on it. It's like not dating the prettiest girl at the bar, or not hitting on the prettiest girl at the bar, but maybe like her quirkier, interesting friend or sister. You know, not the prettiest one you first see. It's a, you know, like a funny cut of meat that you want to braise with, that maybe doesn't have a name or is from like a body part of the animal that you'd rather not think about. That's what we braise, those kinds of things. The kind of cuts that would never really respond to the quickie style of cooking love that you get from a saute pan or a grill. A cut for braise needs gradual kind of courting and then a, you know, long, slow foreplay kind of thing. I know this is getting a little out there. But, you know, braised proteins, they kind of give it up really slowly. They have to be in the right conditions, in the right kind of situation to really give you the love back. And, you know, it's not like a one-night stand kind of tender steak. This is like the long-term commitment that you make when you braise to flavor and to tenderness. And you need to put the time in for braising. And this time of year, it's getting dark. It's getting cold. Sunday afternoon, 4:30. Why not make a braise? It's too cold out and too damp and too nasty to really go out and do anything else. So stay home and braise something. Find one of those weird, gnarly bits of rejected outcast meat in the market and take it home and show it some love. So so braising as a cooking method is about what I like to call the time texture continuum. And when you interplay that time texture continuum with the acid heat complex, you create the braise, the magic. And those are very technical terms. And I actually just made them up, but they're appropriate and they work. But those are the kind of terms that I like to use when I'm teaching at ICE, because the students then think I'm like, you know, I really know what I'm doing. Or here on the show, I like to use those kinds of terms. But there is a science to braising, and those sorts of terms really apply. And we'll get to that science very shortly. But it's not quite an exact science, but there are some basic rules that really have to be adhered to if you want to braise properly. There's a couple of major rules. And when we talk about braising tonight, I'm really just going to talk about proteins, because that's kind of what it's really designed for. But you can braise vegetables too. You can braise fruit. You can braise a lot of things. But really with those guys, that's just more like simmering them in liquid. You're not waiting to break down connective tissue in vegetables. They don't have any. They're not animals. The true magic in braising is in how it conquers the unconquerable and how it makes magic out of garbage sometimes, really. So anyway, tonight on Why We Cook, it is all praise the braise night. So anyway, how is braising different from stewing? You may be thinking, what is she talking about? What's the difference? Well, think of like a pool, a swimming pool. Think of like a community pool. I have a little cottage upstate where I go on the weekends in the summer, and when there's a pool for the community, it's this big pool. And it's interesting to see how people use it. So think about a community pool on like your average summer day where it's like, let's say, 82 degrees out. And you'll get the serious swimmers in there, the people who are swimming for exercise. And all the kids are always in there because they're in there all day as soon as it warms up enough. And these are the people who aren't afraid to get wet or to go deep in the pool. They're all swimming, usually in the deep end, bobbing around. Their feet aren't touching the floor or the bottom. There's a lot of action happening in there. There's bubbling. There's motion. That's a stew. Okay, the serious swimmers in the deep end, moving around a lot, lots of people, lots of action, lots of liquid. That's a stew. Stewing means you're using smaller pieces of protein and they're fully immersed in liquid. They're fully swimming. And there's some action in there, some gentle simmering action. Not a boil ever. You never boil protein, but some simmering action. Braising is different than that. Braising is like when it's a really, really hot day, like when it goes above 90, 95. And all the non-swimmers and all the old people come out and they get in the pool because it's so hot, there's nowhere else you want to be. They get in the pool, but they all stay in the shallow end, partially immersed. That's what braising is. Their feet always stay on the bottom of the pool. They wear big hats and sunglasses to protect themselves. They don't move around much. They're just in there staying moist. Not too much activity. Not too much action, partial immersion. That's a braise, okay? So braised items are the old people standing around in the pool with the big hats not moving up to their waist. Stewing is all the little kids and swimmers splashing around and swimming and moving around in a lot of liquid and having a grand old time of it. Braised items also tend to be bigger than stewed items. They tend to be larger cuts of meat with the bones in. And stewing is like little cubes of meat. So, you know, think about that too, like the very large old lady who stands there and doesn't move versus the little athletic 10-year-old like a baby seal in the pool. Okay, so that's the difference between braising and stewing. We're going to take a little break here, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about braising on Why We Cook. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway, like no other market. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Erica Weitz. And remember that you can always listen to any of our shows on iTunes, podcasted. And now you can listen 24 hours a day on heritageradionetwork.com. 24 hours a day, nonstop. So we've been talking about braising tonight, braising versus stewing. And I was just getting into in the last segment about how braising is more for sort of a slightly larger pieces of meat that maybe have a bone in them versus stewing, which is for little cut up pieces of meat. And braising is a partial immersion in liquid and stewing is a full immersion in liquid. So when you're stewing, things are really swimming around. And when they're braised, they're just kind of standing in one place. But both of the methods are designed for cooking tough meat, for tenderizing tough meat. Since tough meats really, really need to be cooked in liquid in order to conquer them and make them palatable. Tough meats are cuts of meat that come from the parts of animals that get a lot of use or a lot of exercise or that support a lot of its weight. So we're talking about things like shanks, you know, shanks, like the little lamb leg shanks, wings, legs, especially poultry legs or rabbit legs, necks, lamb necks, turkey necks, shoulders, anything that moves around a lot, supports a lot of weight, that's a tough cut. What we're not looking for here for braising are things like loins, like nice tender lamb loins or beef tenderloin, not chicken breasts, not rabbit loins, not sirloins, not saddles, anything you can cook on a grill or a roast or in a saute pan, you don't want to braise because it's too lean and too tender. And the reason that those tough cuts really respond well to liquid heat is that they are full of collagen. And collagen, you've probably heard of because it gets used in beauty products a lot and skincare products. But collagen is the stuff that holds us all together and separates us from jellyfish. Because without collagen, we would be puddles. We wouldn't be upright citizens. It holds our skin and our muscles together. Collagen is what holds us all together. And the more you use a muscle, the more collagen it's going to have in it because it needs more collagen to hold itself together. And what's really cool about cuts of meat that have a lot of collagen in them is that if you put them into liquid, the liquid starts to melt the collagen. It dissolves. And when collagen dissolves, what does it turn into? It turns into gelatin. So that's what gelatin is. It's rendered collagen. So if you cook a tough cut of meat in liquid and the collagen melts and turns into gelatin, the gelatin dissolves in the cooking liquid, which hopefully is high quality stock, which we'll get to. And it gives you what we chefs like to call mouthfeel. Mouthfeel. And mouthfeel is that deliciously thick, gelatinous, viscous quality that signifies a good braise. Without good mouthfeel, it's just soup. Broth. Mouthfeel is, you know, what happens when the collagen dissolves and thickens up that liquid with gelatin. It gets viscous. So where do you begin if you want to bob with the seniors in the braising pool as opposed to swim with the juniors in the deep end? Well, first of all, you're going to need to find yourself some tough meat, some tough cuts. Now, I'm partial to lamb. I really love lamb, and a braised lamb shank is always a good place to start. That's the classic braised item, but there's lamb neck and lamb shoulder and lamb breast, and they're all really good for braising too. You may remember a little while ago, I did a whole show on duck confit, and confit is the same process as braising, except instead of cooking in stock, you're cooking in fat. You're braising in fat. I only mention this because as I was writing this today, I just remembered that I did a confit of lamb shoulder a few years ago when I apprenticed on a lamb farm. I did a little apprenticeship a couple years ago on a grass-fed lamb farm, and I cooked a lamb shoulder in fat. I confit it, and that's really a braise. So you could do that. Anyway, get yourself some tough lamb or some duck legs or short ribs or beef cheeks or rabbit hind legs, anything like that that's kind of tough. Turkey legs braise really well. Get some of those, and then you'll also need some stock. You can't braise without stock, and you want good stock, good brown veal stock from roasted bones or roasted chicken stock. And remember that when you're braising, the collagen from the meat goes into the stock, but you also want stock that's very high in gelatin, because when you make stock from bones, especially the bones of young animals like veal, they're very high in collagen. So you're going to get a lot of gelatin in the stock too, which is why if you make your own stock and you refrigerate it, it sets up into a gel. And that also adds mouthfeel and viscosity. And that's really important because ultimately when we make this braise, you want that stock to reduce and reduce and reduce down into a nice thick sauce. So some of the collagen's coming from the meat, but some of it's also coming from stock. Anyway, if you're not making your own stock, and I don't really expect you to, you want to buy it from a store that's making it. So a good market, maybe someplace like Fairway, actually. They make good stock. But you really want to use good quality stock that has actual bones used to make it. So that means no broth, no canned broth, no beef broth, no chicken broth. You want good quality stock. You can also actually buy little capsules, like little kind of shrink-wrapped capsule packages of something called demi-glace, which is boiled-down stock. And that works too. You can thin that out also. I'll do a whole show on stock one of these days, and we'll talk about that. Okay, so once you have that nice tough meat and your stock, you also need something called mirepoix. So those of you out there who are cooks, my former students who are listening, you know what mirepoix is. It's M-I-R-E-P-O-I-X, mirepoix, not mirepoix, as I've heard in class, mirepoix. Anyway, mirepoix is just this combination of aromatic vegetables that it's added to things like stocks and soups and braises. Usually it's just carrots, celery, and onions. But you can make mirepoix out of anything else. You could use parsnips or turnips or leeks, shallots, fennel, whatever you want, as long as you put some in there, because you want some aromatic vegetables and you want some flavor in there. So figure out what your mirepoix is going to be. If I were doing lamb, I might put in some fennel, some leeks, maybe, you know, get a little Provençal thing going on there. And then you also need acid. You can't braise without acid, because the acid is used to add flavor, but it's also really important for dissolving the collagen. And the acid is usually in the form of wine. If I'm doing lamb, I'll use red wine, or beer or cider, something with alcohol in it helps, something acidic, alcoholic. Or you can use tomato products. You could use canned tomatoes, tomato puree. But even if you're just using wine, you usually want to put in a little tomato paste also for sweetness and for color. Anyway, so the acid, like I said, is for flavor and for color, but it's also to help dissolve that crazy collagen. The acid really helps that too. And you can add herbs, whole sprigs of herbs. You can add spices in whole form or in powdered form. Bay leaves, dried fruit is nice in a braise. Olives, anchovies. There's a lamb stew that you can make where you add 40 cloves of garlic, like a navarin of lamb with 40 cloves of garlic. And they get really soft and sweet. It's not like vampire killing stew. It's really good. So anything that you want to add a lot of flavor. Okay. And now what you have to do when you're braising is you have to decide. You have to make a crucial decision here. Are you making a white braise or a brown braise? What's it going to be? You can't make a beige braise. You can't go in between. It's got to be white or brown. The difference is in the color of the stock that you use and whether you brown the protein or not first. If you've ever had like a traditional French, like coq au vin, Blanquette de Veau, that's like a white braise. It's a white stew. There's no browning involved. You use a white stock. If you've had coq au vin, actually, that's a brown braise. That's dark. Those are really stews, technically, not braises. But you see what I mean? Okay, so you want to decide if you're making brown or white. Usually red meats are brown. Poultry can go either way. It all determines the outcome of your finished product. So do you want your finished product to be dark brown or do you want it to be pale? Both have benefits. Okay, so let's say we're doing lamb shanks. I would start by drying them off really well. I'd season them, salt and pepper, and then I'd brown them really, really well in some oil, high smoke point oil like canola or grapeseed oil. While I'm browning them, I want to heat up my stock so it's nice and hot, and I want to chop up my mirepoix into little pieces. After I brown the lamb, I take it out of the pan that I browned it in, and I put my mirepoix in that pan, and I brown the mirepoix up in the pan too. Then I'm going to add some tomato paste to that. I'm going to brown the tomato paste up with the mirepoix too, and then I'm going to put the lamb back in the pot with that. Then I'm going to pour in wine. I'm making a brown braise, lamb. I'm going to use red wine. So I pour in like a cup or so of good red wine or beer or whatever I'm using, but in this case we're using wine, and let that boil. Bring that wine to a boil. then add your hot stock. Now, this is where we separate the swimmers from the standers in the pool. The swimmers would get fully immersed. These guys are just standing around, remember. So partial immersion. You only want that stock to come halfway up their sides. Remember, these are old ladies. They're in the pool. They don't want to get wet. They don't want to mess up their hair. So partial immersion. Stock comes halfway up the side. Bring it to a very, very gentle simmer. That means just a few bubbles. Cover it and cook it very, very gently, as slow as possible. You could even put it in the oven. Put it in the oven, covered, after an hour, go in there, flip the meat over, put it back in the oven, give another hour. When you can stick a fork in that meat and it goes in really easily and it releases really easily, that's called done. Okay, we have to take another break. When we come back, we'll talk about how to then make a sauce to go with that and how to finish up your braise. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Fairway, like no other market. Welcome back to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. Remember that you can listen to Why We Cook every Tuesday night at 6:30 live on heritageradionetwork.com. You can also listen archived on the website at any time, and you can also podcast on iTunes at any time. And remember that heritageradionetwork.com is now airing programming 24 hours a day, so you never have to be away from us ever again. We will never have to be apart. So tonight we are talking about braising. We are praising the braise tonight because braising is culinary alchemy. It's magic. It basically is taking something tough and inedible and turning it into something spectacular through the sheer force of long, slow time, low temperature, acid, and liquid. You take a tough piece of meat, you throw it in a pot with some liquid, a little acid, something flavorful, let it cook really slow. You'll have a braise. So we were talking about how to get the braise going. You get it in the oven. You cook it. How do you know it's done? You stick a fork in. If it goes in really easily and it comes out really easily, it's done. That's what we call fork tender. That's doneness. So then take that pot out of the oven, or if it's been on top of the stove, take it off the stove. And take a look at your liquid. You want to see what state the liquid's in now. We're looking for a nice thick sauce. The term is nappé. You want the sauce to be nappé, which means it clings to the meat. It doesn't run off. It coats it, and you get a nice thick sauce in the bottom of the plate or the bowl that you're serving them. Usually, if you started out with good stock and not too much liquid and you did this properly, the liquid will just naturally evaporate, and you'll wind up with a nice thick nappé sauce. But if it's not nappé, here's what you do. You take your braise out of the oven or off the stove. Take the protein out and set it aside and let it just sit. Keep it covered so it doesn't get cold. Strain your sauce if you don't want the mirepoix in there, or if you put in whole spices, whole peppercorns, you want to strain those out. Strain the sauce and then put it back on the stove, and if you need to, just start boiling it down and boil down until it thickens, because all you need to do to thicken it is cook out any more water that's in it. Now, you may have some grease on there. It may be a little bit oily on the surface, so you just take a spoon and you can just kind of skim off some of that fat on the surface, and cook the sauce down until it's nappé. Nappé is where you want it. Then take the cooked protein, put it back in the sauce, let it reheat, and let it kind of absorb that sauce and get immersed in it. Because when you serve a braise, it should look like you just pulled that lamb shank dripping and coated with your perfectly nappé sauce. So make sure you get it nappé. Now, if you're reducing and you're not getting nappé, it's not getting thick, and you're running out of liquid, it's because you probably had poor quality stock that didn't have enough gelatin in it. And if you're afraid that you're going to reduce so much that you'll have nothing left, You can thicken the sauce instead. Now, there are a couple of ways of doing this. One is to make something called beurre manier. Beurre manier, manier, like fingers, like hands. Beurre manier is just a little combination. It's like a little Play-Doh that you make with butter, cold butter, and flour, just raw flour, cold butter. You take about a tablespoon of each, and you kind of knead it up together. You make like a little, like Play-Doh out of it. And then you take little bits of that, bits that are about the size of like your thumbnail, and you throw bits of them into the sauce. Throw a little bit of beurre manier in the sauce, and then bring it to a boil and whisk. And the beurre manier will thicken the sauce like that. It'll just thicken it right up because the flour in it will absorb water from the sauce. You don't want to just throw flour in your sauce because you'll just get lumps. You have to do beurre manier. So that'll work really well, the beurre manier. If you don't want to do that, or if you don't have that stuff around, you can use a little slurry. Slurries are what we make out of starches, like cornstarch or arrowroot. You take a little cornstarch, a little arrowroot, mix it with a little bit of cold liquid. It can be cold stock, it could be wine, it could be water. Same thing, about a tablespoon of each. Mix it up, stir it into your sauce, bring it to a boil. That'll do too. Remember, with all of these, it's all about bringing it to a boil, because the boiling is what you need to activate the starch to get it to gelatinize and to absorb liquid. So that can work too. So if reduction's not going to work for you, try the beurre manier, or try using a little bit of starch. That should do it for you. There are also some really funky traditional ways of thickening these sauces too. There's something called Sauerbraten, which is an old German dish, and that was traditionally thickened with ground up ginger snap cookies. So they would take ginger snaps, grind them up into a powder, and throw those in, and they would thicken the sauce and also add nice kind of gingery sweetness, which I think is pretty cool. And then there's also blood. In the old days in France, when they would make a coq au vin, which is a chicken cooked in wine, they would then take some of that chicken's blood and throw that in the sauce, and the blood would thicken up the sauce also. I don't really recommend doing that because I don't necessarily think we can get good quality chicken blood in the market these days. I haven't seen any. So I wouldn't necessarily do that. Maybe if you want to open a vein, drip a few drops in, you could try that. But I don't recommend it. Don't try it. Don't try this at home. But either of those starch methods will work. Now, if you are a set it and forget it kind of cook, you might want to try doing one of these in your slow cooker, if you have a slow cooker. The only problem with braising in a slow cooker is that you can't brown in them first. So if I braise in a slow cooker, I'll brown everything up first in a pot on the stove, and then I'll transfer it, and then I'll let it braise. And it works really, really well. Just put it on low, go away for the entire day, come back, and you have this great thing. However, you don't get a lot of reduction in a slow cooker because it tends to be sealed up. So you might then have to transfer back to a pot and cook down the liquid. So it's a few more steps, but you don't have to think about it while you're away. And then, like all stews and all braises and things that you cook in liquid, they tend to taste better after a day or two in the fridge. And this has actually been proven. Food scientists, flavorists all know that this is a true phenomenon. You put them in the fridge, you let them sit for a day or two, and there are chemical reactions and enzymes and things that are kind of happening in there that make the flavor taste better. And also just in the reheating process, you're sort of remelding those flavors, and the flavor gets better as it sits. So don't be afraid to make a big batch, put it in the fridge, let it sit. Remember to cool it down a little bit first, though, before you put it in the fridge, because if you put a big steaming hot pot of something in your fridge, you can actually kill your compressor. So you don't want to do that. And you can also heat up everything else that's in your fridge and cause it to spoil, and you don't want to do that. So cool it down first till it's room temp, and then put it in the fridge. You could also make a dish like this and break it down into smaller containers and freeze them, and then you can eat this delicious, magical thing you've made all winter long. So that is pretty much what there is to tell you about braising. I highly recommend the technique. I think you should go out and do it, because it is magic. It's turning what would be considered just, you know, tough, gristly, gnarly blech into really good quality, delicious food. And those tough cuts also tend to be a lot cheaper, because most people, they just want to go out there and, you know, cook a chicken breast or a lamb chop. They're afraid of the edgier cuts, the low on the hog, so to speak, cuts. So get out there, take a look. If you have a good butcher, talk to them. If you're in the market, see what they have. Tell them you want to braise, and tell them you're looking for something with a little edge to it, a little character. brown it up, put it in the pot, a little acid, a little stock, a little mirepoix, you're good to go. If you do it and it comes out great, let me know. If you do it and it comes out bad, let me know. You can find me on Facebook at Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network on Facebook. Give me the results. Become a fan of the show. I'd love to hear from you. All right, so we're out of time, and that's it for braising. I hope you try it and have a good week, and we'll see you next week. Thanks. Good night.